It is January 26, 2026, and if you look at the stack of reports on the desk today, you get this very distinct feeling that the tech industry is in a wrestling match with the laws of physics.
And physics is winning.
And physics is winning. It usually does,
It
right?
tends to bat 1,000 in the long run.
So we have a deep dive today that really centers on that collision, you know, between what marketing promised us and what engineering is actually delivering. We've got the switch to honeymoon phase ending pretty abruptly with a very familiar, very frustrating mechanical failure.
And then on the other side of that coin, we're going to look at where engineering is actually, you know, breaking through barriers we thought were permanent. I'm talking about NVIDIA basically dismantling the Intel monopoly.
And Google kind of solving battery anxiety for good.
That seems like it, yeah.
Plus, we need to talk about why Apple is quietly retreating from its social headset strategy, why the moon landing date just slipped again, and a really scary new physical security threat that's popping up in major cities involving holographic stickers.
That last one is particularly nasty because it really exploits the difference between how our eyes work versus how a camera sensor works.
It's a lot to unpack, but I think we have to start with the gaming world because the internet is what's on fire.
It really is.
So the Nintendo Switch 2, it launched back in June 2025. We are exactly 7 months in. And, you know, up until this week, the story was flawless.
Absolutely. The OLED screen is incredible. That DLSS 4K upscaling looks amazing.
Looks like a PS5 almost. But we just hit that 7 month mark and the ghosts are back. Joy-Con drift is trending globally.
And it's trending for the exact same reason it did back in 2017, which is, I think, the part that has people so angry.
Yeah, let's set the stage here because the expectation leading up to this console was that the drift problem was solved for good. We saw the patent filings, we saw all the rumors. Everything pointed to Nintendo switching to Hall effect sensors.
And for anyone listening who isn't a hardware engineer, the difference between Hall effect and what they actually used is, well, it's massive.
Okay, so break that down. A standard joystick, the kind that twisted on the old Switch, uses what? A potentiometer.
A potentiometer, think of it like a mechanical wiper that physically rubs against a little carbon strip to tell the computer, you know, hey, I'm at 50% throttle.
So it's friction. You're literally rubbing two parts together every single time you move the stick.
And friction creates heat, but more importantly, it creates dust. As that carbon strip wears down, you get these microscopic bits of debris inside the sensor housing.
And that debris confuses the electrical reading.
It does. So the stick starts to think it's being pushed left, even when it's sitting dead center. That's your drift.
Okay, so contrast that with Hall effect.
Hall effect is, it's basically magic. It's magnetic. You have a magnet on the stick and a sensor that detects the magnetic fields change. There is zero physical contact.
None at all.
None. It's the difference between a car tire screeching on asphalt versus a maglev train just hovering. A Hall effect sensor should, in theory, never wear out.
So we all assumed Switch 2, premium price tag. Of course, they used the magnets. Then iFixit dropped their tear down last
No
night.
magnets.
No magnets. They found what Nintendo was calling refined potentiometers.
Refined.
That word is doing some heavy lifting.
It's doing a lot of work. I mean, to be fair to the engineers, these aren't the exact same cheap parts from 2017. The carbon film is harder, the alloy on the wiper is smoother.
But the core problem is still there.
The fundamental mechanism still relies on physical degradation. It's still designed to fail, it just takes a little bit longer.
But not long enough, apparently. I saw a clip this morning that just perfectly sums up the mood. A streamer playing Metroid Prime 4 deep in a boss fight, and Samus Aran just casually walks off a ledge into lava.
Oh no.
Because the controller decided neutral was now hard left.
That is the specific nightmare scenario everyone was worried about.
So why do this? I mean, Nintendo paid out millions in class action lawsuits over the first Joy-Cons. Why risk this PR disaster again?
It's a math problem, pure and simple. Hall effect sensors are better, but they are more expensive.
How much more?
At a wholesale scale, we're talking maybe 40 to 60 cents more per unit.
That sounds like nothing. 50 cents.
Well, you multiply 50 cents by 100 million consoles, and suddenly that's $50 million in pure profit margin.
Wow.
Someone in a boardroom ran a risk assessment. They figured the refined parts would last just long enough to outlive the warranty for most people.
It was a calculated risk that backfired almost immediately.
Completely. The wear rates are clearly higher than their simulations predicted. probably because modern games just demand more intense stick inputs. I mean, analysts are already predicting Nintendo will have to announce a free repair program by Q3.
Which will probably cost them more than the $50 million they saved.
The classic penny-wise, pound-foolish situation.
Absolutely. Okay, so while Nintendo is cutting corners, other parts of the hardware world are actually, you know, over-delivering. Let's pivot to the efficiency revolution, because while my controller might be drifting, my phone apparently never needs to be charged again.
This is the good news portion of our deep dive, yes. We're seeing a really fundamental shift in how computers use power.
Let's start with Google. Android 17, codenamed Wafer, just dropped its first developer preview. And buried in the code is a feature called neural hibernation.
Right, and this is totally different from what we usually think of as hibernation.
Yeah, that usually means my laptop takes 10 minutes to wake up and feels all groggy.
Exactly. This isn't about the user experience of waiting. It's about architecture. I mean, think about your phone right now. Even with the screen off, the main brain, the CPU, is waking up constantly.
And it's checking for emails, for notifications, pinging the cell tower.
All the time. It's like a security guard who insists on turning on all the stadium floodlights every time he hears a tiny noise. Those floodlights, the high-performance CPU cores, burn a massive amount of power just to wake up and say, all clear.
So neural hibernation just changes the guard.
Precisely. In Android 17, Google is offloading all of those little background heartbeat tasks to the NPU, the neural processing unit.
The AI chip.
We think of it as the AI chip, but it's actually incredibly efficient at low power pattern recognition. So the CPU and the GPU, they go into this deep sleep. They're basically off.
And the NPU is the new Sentry, but with a tiny flashlight instead of floodlights.
Perfect analogy. It sips microwatts, it handles the pings, the checks, and it only wakes up the big power-hungry chips if something critical happens, like an incoming call.
And the result isn't just a few extra hours, is it?
No, it's not. The early benchmarks on the Pixel 11 prototypes are, well, they're absurd. Standby time, just sitting on a desk, has jumped from about 24 hours to nearly 3 days.
3 days.
3 days.
That completely changes the charger anxiety equation. You could go away for a weekend, forget your cable, and just not care.
It's the biggest shift in mobile power since doze mode, easily. But it's not just phones. The laptop market is going through an even bigger shakeup.
The death of Wintel.
The end of a 30-year era.
For as long as I can remember, if you wanted a real computer, it was Windows plus Intel. That monopoly is now officially a relic.
We knew Qualcomm broke the seal last year, but NVIDIA just kicked the door down. The leaked benchmarks for GeForce Cortex are out.
And they look like typos.
They really do. This is NVIDIA's first real entry into the PC processor market. It's an ARM-based chip, not by 86. It uses those Cortex X6 cores for the logic, paired with an NVIDIA Blackwell-based integrated GPU.
Okay, so let's run the numbers, because this is where it gets wild. Single-core performance.
Matches the Apple M4 Pro.
Multi-core.
Beats the Intel Core Ultra 9.
Nice graphics.
The graphics destroy the Apple M4 Max by 40%.
40% in a laptop chip.
In a fanless laptop chip, that is the key. For 20 years, you had a choice. Thin and light with weak graphics, or you want to play cyberpunk. You buy a thick brick with fans that sound like a jet engine.
And NVIDIA is saying we can have both. The sleek chassis and the high frame rates.
They're proving it. Because they control the whole stack CPU and GPU on the same die, they can manage heat in a way by 86 just can't. The writing is on the wall.
The market reacted immediately. Intel stock was down almost 2.5%.
And why wouldn't it be? If you can run Windows, run AAA games, and have a laptop that's silent and 12 millimeters thick, why would you buy an Intel machine anymore?
Okay, so we've got Nintendo stuck in the past, NVIDIA sprinting into the future. Let's move to the reality check category, where ambitious visions are hitting the hard limits of physics and logistics. Let's start with Apple.
Ah, yes, the Apple Visionaire.
We've been tracking this one. The mass market version is finally coming late this year, and the price is dropping from that insane $3,500 down to $1,500.
Which is still a lot, but it's in the same ballpark as a high-end iPhone, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But to get that price down, they killed a feature that was supposed to be the soul of the device, EyeSight.
This is so fascinating. EyeSight was that external screen on the front that showed a video of your eyes to people in the room. Apple was terrified of the VR isolation stigma.
They didn't want you to look like a robot.
Right. It was their defense against the whole dystopian future narrative. Yeah. But in practice, I mean, it was just uncanny, wasn't it?
A bit weird, yeah. And dim, low res.
And critically, It added a ton of weight and cost. A whole separate screen, a special lens, dedicated processing. By removing it and switching to the A19 iPhone chip, they've apparently cut the headset's weight by 30%.
Which is huge. That's the difference between watching a two-hour movie comfortably and needing to see a chiropractor.
Exactly. But what it really signals is a strategic pivot. Apple is basically admitting, okay, we can't solve the social isolation problem yet.
So they're leaning in.
They're leaning in. They're selling the Vision Air as the ultimate solitary media device. It's for you, not for the people looking at you. Comfort now outweighs the social creepiness factor.
A humble retreat,
mm-hmm.
but probably the right move. Now, speaking of retreats, NASA. This one stings a little. Artemis III.
Back to the moon.
Putting boots back on the moon.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be launching late this year, and now it's officially delayed to mid-2028.
Mid-2028, yeah.
I feel like every time we talk about Artemis, the date slips another 2 years. Is it the spacesuits again?
The suits are a concern, sure, but the real showstopper is physics, specifically the physics of orbital refueling.
Okay, let's drill into this, because I think most people assume it's just launch rocket, go to moon, land. Why do you need a gas station in orbit?
Well, it's because of the vehicle they chose. The SpaceX Starship HLS, it is massive, the size of a skyscraper. It is way too heavy to launch from Earth with enough fuel to get to the moon, land, and come back.
So it gets to orbit basically running on fumes.
Exactly. It parks in low Earth orbit empty. And to fill it up, SpaceX has to launch between 10 and 14 tanker starships.
14 launches. For one single moon mission.
In rapid succession. And here's the really hard part. They're not transferring gasoline. They're transferring cryogenic methane and liquid oxygen.
Super cold liquid.
So cold that it wants to boil off into gas instantly. And in zero gravity, the fuel doesn't just sit at the bottom of the tank. It floats around in bubbles.
So you're trying to pump floating blobs of super cold liquid between two skyscrapers moving at 17,000 miles an hour.
Without the pumps failing, without the fuel boiling, and without any leaks. SpaceX has done one successful small test. But to do 14 massive transfers back to back, that requires a launch cadence nobody in history has ever achieved.
So NASA just looked at the schedule and said, nope, too risky.
They can't risk stranding astronauts in lunar orbit with a half-empty tank. And while they figure that out, the geopolitics are not waiting around.
No. The China factor is the elephant in the room.
Their lunar program, the ILRS, is targeting a landing in 2029 or 2030.
The 2028 date for NASA is getting uncomfortably close to China's 2029 date.
It's neck and neck now. If Artemis slips just one more time, it is entirely possible the next flag on the moon won't be American. It is a genuine race again.
Space is hard. Okay, let's bring it back to Earth for our final segment. Mm-hmm. Because while orbital refueling is a headache for NASA, there is a headache for regular people popping up in London, New York, Tokyo.
The holographic QR phishing scam. This is really clever and really dangerous.
We all know the basic drill, right? You check to see if a sticker is pasted over the real QR code on a parking meter or something.
Right. But these are different. The FBI and Europol just issued a joint advisory about this. Hackers are placing transparent holographic stickers over the real QR code.
Transparent. So if I look at the parking meter, I still see the city's official black and white code underneath it.
To your naked eye, yes. It just looks like a slightly glossy layer of tape, maybe. But your smartphone camera doesn't see like your eye does. It's highly sensitive to light reflection and contrast.
So the camera is seeing something that I'm not.
It is. The holographic layer is designed to catch the light from your phone's flash and reflect a high contrast data pattern that just overrides the ink underneath. Your phone sees the reflection first.
So it reads the hologram before it focuses on the ink.
That's the trick. It's a trick of optics. Your phone ignores the real code, reads the reflection, and sends you to a spoofed payment site that looks identical to the real one.
You type in your credit card thinking you're paying $5 for parking.
And you've just handed your banking credentials to a criminal. And the worst part is, because you saw the physical code with your own eyes, your brain lowers its defenses. You think you verified it, but your camera saw something else entirely.
That is so scary. The disconnect between biological sight and computer vision. So what's the advice? How do we stop this?
The official advice is inconvenient but necessary. Stop scanning QR codes for payments in public spaces.
Just stop. Cold turkey.
Just stop. If there's an official app, use the app. If there's a URL printed on the machine, type it in manually. The 2 seconds you save by scanning are not worth the risk of a drained bank account.
Don't trust the optics.
Because the optics are being weaponized. It really feels like as tech gets more invisible, the scams get more physical, you know? Mm. It's not just a phishing email anymore. It's a sticker on a lamppost.
It's the scene where the digital and physical worlds meet.
And that's where the vulnerability always is.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We've covered a huge amount of ground. We have Nintendo cheaping out, giving us Drift 2.0, reminding us that friction always wins.
Huh?
We have NVIDIA and Google just fundamentally changing efficiency.
Killing the old x86 guard and giving us multi-day battery life. Then you have Apple and NASA bowing to the laws of physics headset weight, fuel transfer dynamics, all of it.
And finally, we can't even trust our own eyes at a parking meter because of holographic optics tricking our cameras.
It's a lot.
I want to leave you with a question to chew on. We talked about Apple cutting eyesight. Are you willing to make that trade? Are you willing to give up the social aspect of tech for a device that is lighter, cheaper, and lasts 3 days on a charge?
Because that's the trend, isn't it? We are moving toward invisible computing. NPU hibernation, background sensors, fanless gaming, it's all seamless. But as that holographic scam shows, when technology becomes invisible, it also becomes much harder to verify.
How do we trust what we can't see? That is something to mull over while you are manually typing in that parking URL. Thanks for diving deep with us today. Stay curious, stay safe, and we'll catch you in the next one.